Sox.
Go, 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 go.
Let's go, 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 White Sox. Chicago is proud of you.
This is White Sox Weekly, the Chicago baseball conversation on the new flagship home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly on the air. We got the legend in studio today. You don't mind me calling you a legend, do you, Rich King? Because you, I mean, how many years in this city?
Well, 48 years on the air. In the city from the time of birth. I was born at Holy Cross Hospital, so I guess from the time of birth, you know.
48 years on the air in Chicago. Yeah. I mean, how many people could say that for real? Who's in that category?
Well, you know, Harry was in it for a long time. Jack Brickhouse was. I mean, Vince Lloyd, a lot of those guys were on for a long, I don't know if they had 48 years, but it was a great 48 years, and I got retired 2.5 years ago, Mark, and I sat out off for a year, and I said, I got to do something, so I called the White Sox, and they were gracious enough to give me some webcast games on the spring games in Arizona. I did 2 years of those, loved every minute of it. The guy named Russ Langer, who did the play-by-play, did one game play-by-play. But in any event, I got back in, and now I'm doing some work for you guys, which is very rewarding. You know, back in radio, I always tell people, television was work. It was hard work. Radio is fun, and we're going to have a lot of fun here.
We are White Sox Weekly with you till 6, and then we'll do the beat. Harry Tynholz will be along at 6 o'clock, and It's interesting. You were just up in Detroit as well, hanging out with the ball club a little bit. Of course, White Sox, if you missed it today, they were rained out. There will be game 3 of what was a 4-game series tomorrow. They'll do a day-night doubleheader August the 6th. But you were up in Detroit on Thursday.
Yeah, they lost that game, but they won Friday. A nice effort by Carlos Rodon. You know, the team is playing pretty decent ball, but they're not at full strength whatsoever. They got a long way to go. Jose Abreu had a good night last night, finally broke out of his slump, but Eloy Jimenez is not hitting what he should be doing. So it's a long, they're playing decent, better than last year. Last year, at this point, they were 5-14. So it makes a big difference being 8-11. So hoping for better things. The pitching is the key, as everybody knows about the White Sox.
Yeah, no doubt. And so the way the season started, I mean, to be where they're at here, playing much better baseball this week, right. It's like, all right, let's hang around here. And you never know what's going to happen in the division, right? No one, I don't think anyone's going to run away with it.
Nope.
And you know, as guys develop, who knows what's possible this year? Very, very, very long season. I want to remind everybody that baseball is a long season.
It is. It's a marathon, and I think the Yankees series gave them some confidence, especially that 2-3 from New York was very impressive, and they came out and beat the Royals. They should have won the last game of the series, left 14 men on base. That was a tough loss, but all in all, I say pretty successful so far for the White Sox. But again, they are far from being 100%.
Yeah, and we're going to do a lot today on Tim Anderson. The incident on Wednesday where the Sox did lose 4-3 in 10 innings, and Tim hits a 2-run homer, and Tim throws his bat at the dugout.
Right.
Tim enjoys playing baseball. Tim yells out whatever he yells out as he hits the homer, and then Brad Keller's got a huge problem with him. Maybe it was not just Brad Keller. Perhaps it came from the dugout as well. We don't know. Nobody would ever own up to that. Ned Yost after the game was like, pitch got away, that standard thing. Right. I mean, I get it. He's not going to own. He doesn't want to get fined.
Right.
But I just it's amazing to me that baseball, as we tend to, I would like to think, mature as people, and yet and try to enjoy our lives, that they still want to go old school. And I'm going to hit you because you just enjoyed hitting a home run. And now you're going to get suspended because we're going to have some conversation on the field, words said, which old school-wise, you never get suspended for.
Right.
But now you are. It's like the whole thing mixes together in kind of some ugly, terrible pot.
It made no sense to me at all because, in fact, I covered the game, and I asked Ricky Renteria after the game why Joe West ejected Anderson, because he didn't charge the mound, right?
Right.
And there was no punches thrown. And I got no answer. He said that there was no explanation. I asked Anderson that question. Anderson said he didn't know. The next day in Detroit, before the game, we were there. And again, we interviewed Anderson. It's done. I'm done. I'll talk about it. And no explanations why he got thrown out, even off the record. So it came out, of course, yesterday. It was a racial thing. But, you know, if you want to go about calling names, it goes back way back in baseball, and you know, and I don't know if that's justification or not. There's no racial, there's no excuse for racial situations in any sport. However, in this situation, from what I understand, he said, I don't understand how he got suspended.
It's not really a racial thing. He just used a word that you could throw under that umbrella, a word that nobody should say. I mean, he used the N-word. I get it. But this is a guy who is in the moment. He wasn't saying it in a derogatory term at a race per se. He was just calling an individual a negative word, period. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like he was calling him out because of the color of his skin. He was just throwing a word at him.
Right.
And to get suspended for that is ridiculous. I think, for me, it does matter that it's a black guy saying it to a white guy. Maybe it shouldn't, but for me, like, let's put the whole context of what just happened right now,
right.
Let's look the other way and let's move along. That's how I see it, at least.
Well, the whole thing is a generational thing, too, because, you know, if you look at the NFL and the NBA, I covered 400 Bears games in my career, all right? And as the years went on, the taunting got worse. Guys would get tackled, and a guy would stand over him and point at his face.
Yeah.
Now, that's different than what Anderson did. Anderson didn't point at anybody. He threw his bat toward the White Sox dugout, didn't point at Kansas City or the pitcher, which is significant. But in the NBA and the NFL, that's standard procedure, and it's a younger generation thing. Now, the old school guys, Spahn, Gibson, all those guys, yeah, they'd plunk you. But times are changing, you know. It's a different era, so we'll see what happens. But I'm sure the White Sox, and I know this for a fact, they want to see this thing gone. They're done with it, you know. It's over and move on from here.
And I get that. We're going to talk about it a little bit here on White Sox Weekly. We're going to play some audio coming back here from Trevor Bauer, Indians pitcher, who was on MLB Radio this week and had some very interesting things to say. And if you want to chime in, feel free, 312-981-7200. Is the phone number here, 312-981-7200. Also the text line, you can jump in there. And a reminder, you can take the family out to the ball game with a family four-pack. You get four tickets, four hot dogs, four drinks, four chips, starting at $49. It's brought to you by Country Financial. Prepare for your financial future one simple step at a time. And take simplesteps.com. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/four-packs today.
I get to do this one?
You get to do that
one. Wow, it's great. White Sox fans, join us at the White Sox take on the Detroit Tigers on Saturday, April 27th at 6:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans receive a Jose Abreu Silver Slugger bobblehead powered by Constellation, America's energy choice. Purchase your tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME.
All right, quick timeout here. Coming back, we'll play Trevor Bauer. And also, Ricky Renteria, some interesting stuff from Ricky about what happened in the brawl on Wednesday. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN.
It's good to be king, just for a while.
Look at that, Rich King. You got a little theme song for you, a little Tom Petty.
Sounds good to me.
I mean, that's winning right there. 720 WGN, it's White Sox Weekly. We're going to play some audio from Trevor Bauer, the Indians pitcher, who had a lot of people had reactions to what happened with Tim Anderson and Brad Keller this week. I should mention, by the way, Rich, you knew we did a show on Thursday night on Chet Kopech here, Steve Cochran honoring him, Bill and Wendy honoring him. I know that you spent a ton of time with Chet.
Well, I did in the Bears press box for years and years. In fact, our seats were next to each other, and he was there every week. And we talked mostly about the old days, about Jack Brickhouse and Irv Cupson and all the great Chicago legends. Chet was wired and with the Bears. I think he had more tickets than the Bears had. I mean, it's for comp tickets.
Yeah.
But he was a true man of his own making. I mean, he was what he was, a hustler. He had self-admitted entertainer. He took shots at people, totally different than my style. But he was what he was, and I took that. You know, we were friends at the end of the deal. We were competitors in the old days, but all of his stories are about the famous interviews Irv Cupson did at halftime with the Bears and his days in roller derby, and he was quite a character and larger than life. He loved it. I'll tell you right now, knowing Chet as I did, he would love the publicity he's getting right now because he's front page news again. That's what he wanted.
Let's go live to the South Side, 35th and Shields. Yeah. Pick it up with the old man. What did he call old Comiskey? Do you have another name for? I know the barn was the old lady.
He had a lot of phrases, and But he was true to himself. I told him that many times, as you are what you are, and he's admitted. I take shots, I do things, and for effect, and that's what he did. I know people can take issue with some of the things he did, but at least he was honest about it.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so here let's get into some reaction to Tim Anderson. First off, people might forget Marcus Stroman up with the Blue Jays.
Right,
Anderson and him had a moment where Timmy was talking, Stroman didn't like it, threw at him the whole thing, and then he goes out and goes on Instagram. It's the world we live in. Love it. And hate it all at the same time. So he writes, quote, "Felt like I needed to speak on this. You can't suspend someone for language. That's ridiculous. Also, what he said is also normal slang trash talk in our culture. I don't believe in, quote, beef, and I never take my battles off the field. I love competing against competitors. What happens between the lines always stays there for me. I never allow confrontations on the field that happen in the heat of the moment to carry over after the game and cause me to change my view on the character of my opponents. I respect and love everyone. We all go to different places mentally on the field in order to compete at the highest level." And he finishes up, "I support passion and emotion. I've been authentic from the beginning. I will always speak my mind when I feel things aren't right. And I will always defend and respect our culture in the game. I stand with Tim Anderson on this."
And that's the generational thing I talked about earlier, that there's a different thinking about, you know, in my era when I was growing up and the old guys, if somebody even threw a bat or whatever or taunted you, you probably punched them out. But that whole thing has changed. I don't think these guys take it that personally now, especially in the NFL. I know they don't take it personal because there would be more fights. They just accept it and try to, as Anderson told me, he said, somebody else asked him, what'd you do if somebody did that to you, or the pitcher? And he said, well, I try to strike him off the next time.
Right.
That's what they do. That's how they feel about it. And it's totally different than when we grew up, but times change, you know?
Yeah, and sometimes they change for the better, and having fun on a baseball field, I don't think that's a terrible thing. Let's hear what Trevor Bauer, let's see what the Indians hurler had to say on MLB Radio.
I'm very much on the side of showing more emotion and celebrating accomplishments on the field and stuff like that. So I thought it was great on Tim's part. I mean, look, the guy just hit a homer to put his team ahead. It is hard to hit a home run in the big leagues. Just to hit the ball, it's hard. I struggle with that myself. But to hit a homer off a guy that's been throwing well, and like another big league pitcher, like, it's hard. So shoot, you should celebrate it. I mean, that's what the fans really want to see, I think. Like, look at what the NFL did. They tried to take away end zone celebrations, faced massive backlash, and then put them back in, and everybody's happy. It gets so much play. It gets put all over social media, draws a lot of fan attention in. You see it all the time in the NBA. Guys have their three-point, you know, they hit a three-pointer, they have their little dance, or their, you know, Harden's got the, you know, keep feeding me little thing that he does, and Curry's got his little
shimmy,
you know, celebration that he does. Yeah, like, it's great. I don't see it as showing someone up, you know. It's just like celebrating, like, man, this game's hard and I just did something. I'm going to celebrate it. And no one gets mad. Like, if someone hits a homer and the entire dugout celebrates, like, no one gets mad about that, you know. So why are we getting mad about a player celebrating? Now, that being said, I'm a pitcher and I definitely understand that there's, you know, lines that can be crossed. Like, if you are talking to me or staring at me or making it personal, like at me, mm-hmm. then, you know, there might be an issue. But I don't think Tim did that. I think he hit it and he looked at his dugout and he was trying to fire his guys up. It wasn't at all about the opposing team. It was, you know, like celebrating with, you know, me personally and with my guys. So that's kind of where I stand on it, man. The baseball needs more of that because, like you said, it created a huge story, and now a bunch mm-hmm. of people's eyes are on baseball, and that's good for the game.
How about that part? Baseball needs more of that.
Well, exactly right, and that's the thinking of the modern athlete, and that's what I told you earlier, and I think that sums it up pretty well. I think in Anderson's case, he's exactly right, Trevor, is because he did not show up the pitcher. He threw the bat at the White Sox dugout and did the celebrating there, and if he had done that, yeah, there'd have been an issue. Or if he had pointed at the guy or something, the pitcher, then have an issue. But there's no issue as far as that's the way the modern guy thinks. Again, this is a clash of generations. I mean, you've got the old, Ned Yost, old school manager.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's going to change. It's inevitable. It's going to change eventually.
Well, and here, let's bring in Ricky Renteria, where he, you know, pull up the cut, Curtis, about him talking on the field. Because, you know, Ricky's been around the game for 40-plus years, and so, and of course, he's going to back his player. We know this, but there's some interesting context on what he has to say.
The game has changed a ton in that there's cameras, phones, there's things everywhere now, correct?
Right.
So this is my 39th or 40th year in baseball. I venture to say that over the years there have been some things said or not said or whatever that, you know, would make you cringe and curl up, but, you know, that's our arena. This is our clubhouse. The field is our arena for both teams. When they're out there competing, that's our arena. And so, you know, guys go out there to compete. They're not going out there to play tiddlywinks. They're going out there, I mean, not that tiddlywinks is a competitive sport. They're competing, you know, and the emotions are high, and that's the way it should be. If anybody wants to see two teams go out there with not having heart and drive, and a desire to want to compete and win, you probably wouldn't see emotion like that. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, both teams should be commended for having the desire and the energy to want to go out there and show emotion and to battle. That's what it's about at the end of the day.
And so a lot of that cut was about the use of the N-word, and he's talking about, this is our field, this is where we're doing things, and what's said on the field shouldn't be legislated. You're going to get suspended for the words coming out of your mouth. That's part of what he's talking about. Right. And then I did like how he's... Is tiddlywinks actually a sport?
No, I don't think it is. But that's vintage Ricky right there. We talked in Detroit about that a little bit, too. But, you know, it is, as I say, I keep repeating this, but it is a change of the guard here. You're talking about kids in their 20s. And, you know, years ago when I did the White Sox games in the 80s, hanging around the pitchers, Ed Farmer and does the games now for the White Sox, and Ross Baumgarten and Ken Kravick, guys like that. Kravick told me that if a guy got into the batter's box and started gyrating a lot and making a big fuss like he's digging in, first pitcher bat his knees inside. And these guys, that's the way they dealt with things back then. But again, that was back then. This is now. This is 2019. And it's hard for older people to change and see that. And, you know, quite frankly, when I watch the NFL games, and I thought, well, if I was this guy on the field, the guy's pointing at me, I'm getting up and hitting him. So, but that's not the way these guys think. They think differently.
And sometimes that happens. For the records, by the way, tiddlywinks is a game played on a flat felt mat with sets of small discs called winks.
Yep.
A pot, which is the tar. You know this, Rich?
Oh, yeah.
Really? You played tiddlywinks?
Oh, yeah. When I was a kid, yeah.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
This is a generational thing.
It is. It is. Little, you know, iron, little aluminum, what they throw them out there and you play.
312-98.
I'll ask me the rules because I've
been. No, I got talking. Them right here.
They're talking 60 years ago.
I would like to just put that out there to the old phone line text line, 312-981-7200, if you've ever played tiddlywinks. I'm kind of interested in talking to you. All right, let's get you into news. And there's one soundbite from Tim that he was honoring a player this week that all of baseball did, Jackie Robinson. So I'm going to play that. And I got a question for you coming back, how it can tie into...
Sure.
How,
it ties in, definitely.
Yeah.
No question.
It's role model stuff here. All right, 720 WGN News coming up.
Wow, what a play!
720 WGN, the team's flagship radio station.
You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
Sox rained out today in Detroit. Makeup doubleheader, day-night doubleheader, August 6th. They didn't have those back in the day, Rich King.
We had scheduled doubleheaders.
Yeah, nice straight doubleheader, one ticket.
Yeah, that's right.
Come on.
Two off days during the week. It was a different era.
That was a little more fan-friendly back in the day. We're going to get into Tim Anderson, who was honoring Jackie Robinson this week. But first, Rich, you got a message for White Sox fans.
Okay, White Sox fans, join us as the White Sox take on the Boston Red Sox on Thursday, May 2nd at 7:10 p.m. The first 10,000 fans receive a free White Sox-themed T-shirt presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Bring your business home to Bedford Park and win big. Hey. Purchase your tickets today by visiting WhiteSox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME.
And now is your chance to catch all the action at home with the season-long ballpark pass. It's just $49.99 per month. You get access to at least 11 games per month. Let's see, that's do the math on that. 11 divided by 50 bucks. That is less than $5 a game here, team. While you get to see matchups, great promotional giveaways. Don't forget about that. You can lock in your ballpark pass today at whitesox.com/ballpark pass. It was Jackie Robinson Day, everybody wearing 42, April 15th on Monday, which is one of the coolest things that baseball does. He passed away in 72, I want to say, and they started doing this in 1997, 25 years later. But it's a very nice thing that baseball does.
Indeed it is.
Yeah, and
years ago, I mean, you know, Jackie, talk about racial problems. I mean, Jackie Robinson took horrible abuse, as you well know.
Right.
When he started out.
The worst.
Yeah, the worst. Edward was all over the place back then. But I had a chance to interview Sharon Robinson, his daughter, a few years ago. The White Sox had hosted the Jackie Robinson Day event, and they had a big celebration, a big party, and it was a really nice event. And the movie just come out, 42.
Yeah.
And Sharon Robinson, I asked her what was the most significant part of that movie. And she said there was a scene where a little boy's in the stands and with his father. And the little boy's watching the game. He's just cheering on. And the father gets up and starts getting on Jackie Robinson using the N-word. And then the kid, after about half a minute of this or a minute, sees his father doing it, and he does it. He starts using it. And she says, that's exactly what it is. It's learned behavior.
No doubt.
When you're a child and your father does it, you do it. And that's what you have to attack, and you have to change that mentality. It's indeed hard to do, but you have to do it. And that's what Jackie Robinson's life is all about. And he certainly changed a lot in his great career. And, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf, of course, growing up, was in Brooklyn when Jackie was there, and has stories, I'm sure, about Jackie, too. And but it's a historic event. And that's why he's honored, because he's such a legend and such a, I guess, the most impactful player in terms of the culture of the game and the history of the game.
Yeah, straight hero. So this was Tim. The White Sox wanted to honor Jackie, and Tim, of course, is the only African American baseball player on the team. You got the, you know, baseball right now is 7-some-odd% African American. Hopefully that will change. But who knows how the demographics of baseball will look in 5-10 years. But here was Tim through the White Sox honoring Jackie.
Dear Jackie, how can we say thank you for paving the way for me, for my kids, for kids everywhere? How can we thank you for playing hard, for playing fast, for shocking the world? How can we say thank you for standing up, for being stronger, for being an icon, legend, an example? How can we say thank you the way you showed us, with actions?
So it's really awesome, and it's better, even better visually, obviously, so you can check it out. You go to the White Sox Twitter, you can just, you guys know how to do this, hit up your computer, find it. It's awesome. Powerful, right?
Well, I got one more story about this, and it's really interesting, because I had a chance after I retired to teach at DePaul.
Wow.
Two years of broadcast journalism class, and young people in their 20s. And this is good for me, because when you get, I mentioned this earlier, when you get older, the ability to change diminishes. You don't want it. You don't want to see change when you get older sometimes. But with these kids in class, I got to know how they think. And the movie 42 had just come out a few years ago. And so I asked the class, I said, how many of you seen this movie? Only one had seen it of 12 students. And I got on their case pretty good. I said, if you want to be in sports, you got to watch the 42, or at least see a documentary on Jackie Robinson. Because history, which I don't know why, what happened over the years in this education system in our country, for some reason, they stopped teaching history. And if you don't learn from history, you're going to repeat the same mistakes over and over again. It's a given fact. And if you don't know the story of Jackie Robinson, you're not going to understand what's going on today. You're not going to understand the whole culture, the climate. So you have to know things like that, the abuse he took, and the mentality back then in this country. And if you understand that back then, you can relate it better to what happened even with Tim Anderson's case. It's a cultural thing. And if you don't read about it, understand it, you're not going to get on too much, and you're not going to learn from the experience.
Yeah, and people love to romance baseball, the green grass, the national pastime, apple pie, hot dogs. It also has a very ugly history.
It does.
And to, you know, I don't know if the word is embrace, but baseball should not run away from that. You should use it as a teaching point, which they have.
They have.
And you got to own it, man. This is part of the history of baseball. It's part of the history of this country.
Right.
And we're moving forward, and that's a beautiful thing.
Just think about the guys in the old Negro League who played
right
in obscurity for all those years, never got their due, and could have been in the major leagues, probably better than a lot of major league players. And there was an unwritten rule among the baseball owners, no black players. There was no legislation about it, but that was a racist operation back then, and it changed, and Jackie Robinson changed it. And to the baseball's credit now, I think they've embraced it, and they have honored Jackie Robinson and realized what happened and are trying to forge ahead to a different era.
Yeah, I was reading about Jackie this week, just thinking about Ben Chapman, who was the Phillies manager, who just, I mean...
Oh, terrible.
The worst.
Yeah.
And that was the manager, and everybody in the dugout was saying the same stuff. That's how they went.
And his own teammates were against him. I mean, it was a rough first couple years for Jackie, and he had to suck it up and not retaliate, which is even harder, and still play baseball and perform. So the man deserves what he's getting, no question about it.
So I want to take a left turn here, because I thought that what Timmy is... First of all, Tim Anderson has been incredible in the community. He's a tremendous ambassador for the White Sox, on the field, off the field, all of it. And White Sox fans are, and baseball fans for the most part, are pretty much universal in saying that Tim Anderson did not do anything wrong, throwing his bat, whatnot. He wasn't showing up the pitcher, all that stuff. But I do want to ask the question here, 312-981-7200. Do you want your kid, who may love Tim Anderson, wear his jersey? Do you want him emulating that behavior if he's playing in a little league game and he hits a home run and he's going to throw his bat at his whatever fence dugout and puff out his chest, whatnot? Because when I go and watch my niece who's 12, or if I go and watch my fiance's nephews who are, 6 and 3, I see kids out there. If they're playing basketball, they're doing James Harden type of stuff, and it's like, oh my God! Well, I mean, how far are we going to go in 15 years if these are their heroes? This is what they're seeing,
right?
So that part of the discussion to me is interesting.
I got the answer for you.
Okay, thanks, Rich.
The answer is what Trevor Bauer said. I think you have to tell the kids, look, it's okay to celebrate, but do not in any way show up the opponent. Do not point at them. Do not tout them or whatever. They're taunting. Do not do all that stuff that would get you a reaction. If you keep it celebrations of the teammates, throw the bat at the dugout, your own dugout or whatever, it's fine. The minute you start doing the opposite, going at a pitcher or in a football, whatever, going at a defensive back, then you're inviting some problems. So I think Bauer summed it up pretty good.
So if Rich King was, say, the manager of a high school team.
Right.
Football, baseball, basketball, whatever, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And you had a kid who's celebrating a lot, but it's over the top. You let him roll?
No, you have to stop it. If somebody points at a pitcher or gets to be a hot shot, I stop it. I say, you can't show up that guy because it's not sportsmanship. It's okay to celebrate. You know, a guy scores a touchdown, I got no problem. You got no problem with that. Nobody has
a problem. I don't.
As long as they don't go in the guy's face and point at him, the defensive back. That's a problem. And if I'm the defensive back in that position, then I can retaliate. But as long as you point to the crowd or your own teammates or hug each other, or in Tim Anderson's case, the White Sox bench, I got no issues with. The minute you start going after the pitcher or the opposition, then I got an issue with. You got to tell them that.
It's a pretty nuanced conversation for parents to have with their kids, I would think.
I'd say it's a job raising kids in general. I never had any kids, but I can tell you right now, it's a tough thing to do, but it has to be addressed. It has to be taught. As I said, Bauer had it right. The way these guys think, they don't take offense to it. All right, they don't care if the guy celebrates. So fine. But if it's at them, they care. That's the difference.
Fair enough. All right, our celebration conversation sponsored by Mazda of Orland Park, ZoomZoomNation.com, where they're always trying to make your car shopping fun. 312-981-7200. Quick timeout. It's White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN, the great Rich King sitting in today. And the White Sox, if you missed it, were rained out today. Doubleheader makeup August the 6th. Regular game tomorrow with the Detroit Tigers. We were talking during the break. You had a moment with Michael Kopech in spring training.
Well, you know, mentioned the White Sox record, 8-11 as opposed to 5-14 a year ago. And they've, by far, they've got a long way to go. I mean, talk about Jose Abreu off to a slow start. Even Eloy Jimenez off to a slow start at 3-22 for the week. Abreu was 3-19 for the week. They're still winning games, though, and managed to be just three games under 500. But this ball club, Ricky Renteria set the tone in spring training when he said, this is a notch up this year. We're going to have to perform better than we did last year. The days of, oh, it's okay to, you know, get some guys some experience, those days are over. We want to win some more games. And in that regard, I was when I did the webcast games, I spent a lot of time in the locker. I mean, I was there all the time trying to pick up information. And the other day I was sitting with Ed Farmer. It was before the game, and Michael Kopech walked along. And of course, he's recovering from the surgery, and he had the scar. He showed us the scar. And he said something very interesting. And I thought about this, thought of the modern-day athlete and even the old-time athlete. You know, most people project the White Sox to be somewhere down the road, 500 if they're lucky or whatever projections they have. Everybody has projections. But these guys can't think that way. And Kopech leaned over at one point, Ed was talking to him, and he said, you know, I hope I can get back for the playoffs.
Oh, my God.
And I thought, you know what, most of us scribes, the writers, you know, poo-poo, that kind of thing. But that is the way you have to think. You cannot think, as an athlete, that you're going to settle for 500. You're gunning for the big prize. If you get in the playoffs, maybe you get lucky, advance. That's the way they think. And I thought, that's pretty interesting. There's a young man who, you know, is sitting it out all year long, but they won't let him back for the playoffs. And I want to make that plain right now. He's going to be next year. But he thought, I want to see this team make the playoffs. Now, that's the way you have to think. Not that they'll make it. Who knows what's going to happen? Hopefully they will make it. But that's the mentality you have to have. And it goes back to what Anderson was doing. He's trying to fire up his teammates. They're out there to do it. And sometimes I think all my years in the business, and you look at the way we project, sit back here in front of a microphone, and the writers project. They can't think that way. They can't think, well, we're lucky to finish 500. You know?
Well,
it doesn't work.
It's always interesting because a lot of media, and I'm guilty of this as well, you'll ask them questions basically saying, like, you know, how are you going to bounce back from this loss? It's like, these guys play every day. You think they're not going to be able to shake off a tough extra inning, bullpen blew it when you were leading 5-3, you lost 6-5. You think they're not going to show up tomorrow and be ready to go? This is what they do. Yeah. So, and with Kopech, it's the same. It's around the same ballpark. Like, I'm going to do my very best to be ready as soon as possible. And if I, you know, hopefully I'll be able to pitch in the playoffs. I appreciate the mentality.
Yeah, and the age factor too. You know, if you're around as long as I've been, you see the difference in lockers. I've been so many lockers in my life. It's changed over the years. All right, guys in the old days took losses harder. I mean, you walked into a clubhouse after a loss, man, you were lucky to get you don't make eye contact with guys.
Yeah.
Nowadays, not that they're happy about loss, but they're not as devastated by this as the old players were. And you can look at it, it's interesting because you look at it two ways, right? Well, the old players are more fire, but you also look at it, well, it's more realistic. You're not going to win every game, all right? So you can't get devastated by one loss. You're unhappy about it. You suck it up, and it's always tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, when I go back, when I started covering like 97, okay? And like the first baseball team I was really around was the 98 Cubs. And you had Mark Grace, Rod Beck, Matt Karchner, Jeff Blauser. Those guys after a game, they had, you know, huge 20-ounce cups of beer. They were smoking in the clubhouse. It was a totally different scene. And, you know, I can remember, you know, covering the Sox, and Paul Konerko would have Miller Lights after the game, whatnot. You rarely see a guy sitting at his locker after a game drinking a beer. It just doesn't happen. Like, they're having a protein shake, or they're out the door. It's just it's a totally different animal. Smoking in the clubhouse, you would never see that now.
No,
maybe a dip here and there, but that's, you know, it's so different.
No, it's a different attitude. And also, what's changed is the microscope's on these guys, even on their off hour. They can't on the road. Guys on the road in the old days, they had all kinds of hijinks going on. I don't think they can do that nowadays. I don't travel that much. So I was in Detroit with them, but they can't go out and do the things the old guys did, you know. And I think there's a big difference there. The media is so intrusive now, and they've been forced to back off and be very secretive. Private. Yeah. Their private lives, their private life.
And you can't blame them for that.
No, you can't. I mean, look at our business too. I mean, you know, you can't. In the old days, broadcasters were more flamboyant. I can tell you firsthand. You can't do the things. I mean, you go back to Harry Carey and the things they did, and guys like Jack Drees and Brickhouse. That was a totally different era. You can say it was more fun, but that's a matter of perspective. Nowadays, it's totally different.
Yeah, let's go back in time real quick here. We pulled something from 2007. It happened this week, and it's by one of the most favorite White Sox of all time.
Down ball.
Look at Hawk just letting it breathe. There you go, Hawk, with the call at Burley's. That was the 16th no-hitter in White Sox history. 6-0 win over the Rangers.
2 hours and 7 minutes, I think. That's the game. A short game.
See,
that was something else. You know, hearing that crowd noise, too, was something else. Because on a side note, and I don't know if this is White Sox related, but I guess it is in a way baseball related. You know, the great Vin Scully got into broadcasting because of the crowd noise. He was listening to a Georgia Tech game in Brooklyn, and heard the crowd noise. He's 7 or 8 years old. He thought this would be a great thing to do, be a sportscaster. So the crowd noise brings on the excitement, and that's you heard it there. And after that brilliant no-hitter, and it's great to hear.
Yeah, and you're driving around in the car, and you get that good crowd noise going. I would always turn it up. You can feel it, man.
You know, I'll tell you a story about my late wife Maggie. She was legally blind, all right, but she wanted to go to the game, and I got season tickets, and Robin Ventura at a grand slam beat the Rangers, the Texas Rangers, I guess. And she couldn't see it, but she heard it. And her eyes lit up. And it was a great thing to see. And I already told Robin about that. She made my late wife very happy with that home run because she was there and she heard the crowd noise. And I'll never forget that as long as I live. So crowd noise, it's what it's all about, is excitement of the game.
That's a beautiful story right there. Hey, we'll get a little minor league update coming up after the 5 o'clock news. White Sox Weekly, Rich King sitting in on 720 WGN.
A 3-run homer for Tim Anderson. 3-1 White Sox.
Back to White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN.
Second hour, White Sox Weekly. Mark Harmon and Rich King with you on 720 WGN. We did some Tim Anderson in the first hour. Don Cooper. Coop coming up at 5:35 today. And in about a couple minutes here, I'm going to play a soundbite from Joe Weil, who is the voice of the Winston-Salem Dash, and he's watching Luis Robert hit 7,000 for about one more week before he gets moved up to Double A. But we were talking in the break. You had a Tom Skilling story that you got to share.
Well, you mentioned Skilling. You know, Tom is a great a guy as he is on the air. That's how he is off the air. He is the person you see on the air is the person you see off the air. And years ago, when April and I got married, I invited him, of course, to the wedding down here at Navy Pier. Right, looking at it right now, out the window here, and he became the star of the wedding. He said, I only got 2 hours. And I said, well, hey, Tom, I'm glad you came, you know. And 2 hours turned into three, and all the relatives are talking to him, and he's loving it. He stayed till 1 o'clock in the morning. And I told April, he stole the show from the bride. he was the bride at the wedding, but he's a great guy and one of the great personalities in our business, needless to say.
It's truly amazing that he became that famous as a weatherman. Like, the weather. You're not the sports guy. You're not the news guy. You're the weather guy. And somehow he was able to connect telling you it was going to be sunny outside. That's amazing.
Yeah, but he did it by hard work. I mean, you know, in the old days, the guys didn't do as much graphics as Tom did. Tom was a pioneer in that. Years ago, he was bringing in graphics all the time, and they gave him more time. And of course, he got a lot of time now. But that's what it made him, and his personality came across as a genuinely nice person. And you find that people relate to that. And you know, you can be controversial in this business, it's fine, but you also turn off a lot of people. Tom captured everybody, and 99% of the people like the guy, and that's why they watch. So that's why he became so popular.
I mean, he's synonymous with weather in the city.
Yes.
It's incredible. The weather, the atmospheric pressure. You have all those graphics going on.
And I can tell you, I asked him one time.
It's unbelievable.
I asked him after a show one time about global warming.
Yeah.
And about 15 minutes later, he was still talking about it. I mean, he knew his stuff and knows his stuff, and people know that.
Yeah. All right, we're going to get Joe Weiler here in a second. But first, just a couple messages for me and Rich. Number one, you can learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp. I would love to do this. It starts at $149. Kids age 5 to 12 can register for a camp at any of our 30 locations. All participants will receive a White Sox hat, a T-shirt, 4 game tickets, and an exclusive look at Guaranteed Rate Field. Register today at whitesox.com/play.
And a reminder, join us as the White Sox take on the Boston Red Sox on Sunday, May 5th at 1:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans receive a Los White Sox soccer jersey presented by Coca-Cola. Grab an ice-cold Coca-Cola and enjoy the game. To purchase your tickets, visit whitesox.com.
All right, let's go down to Winston-Salem. Let's do a little check topic here. Pick it up with the voice of the Dash, Joe Weil. Been there for decades covering single-A baseball. Actually, he's like 24 years old, but very well-seasoned guy, knows his stuff. And I just wanted to ask him about Luis Robert. And, I'm assuming that you're seeing a lot of good stuff here, Joe Weil.
Watching this guy perform on a day-to-day basis is truly, it's a gift. I mean, it's been amazing to see the things that he has done in Winston-Salem through the first 15 games of our season. Their video game numbers, he leads the Carolina League in just about every offensive category. We know that a promotion to Birmingham is coming up very, very soon, so we're trying to take it in really every moment we can. And it's something I've said on the air a couple times recently. I just say, Dash fans, appreciate this while you can, because he's not going to be here very long.
What do you like about him the most?
God, that's a tough question. I'll give you a couple of things. I mean, obviously the physical tools are amazing, but the speed is what has always stood out to me with Luis. Even last year when the hitting wasn't coming around, he was just gliding in the outfield, and he'd make plays that you thought were going to be extra base hits, and he'd somehow get to baseball. I think that'll play regardless of what level he ultimately is at, and once he gets to the big leagues, that's going to be one of the big things that he will utilize to his success. The power has really come along here in his second stint with Winston-Salem. He already has 6 home runs, which leads the Carolina League. But the speed is really what stood out to me on every facet. He's great on the bases. He's great in the outfield with everything that comes with that. And the second thing is really his personality. His American teammates love him, and obviously his Hispanic teammates love him as well, but he has ingrained himself so much within the culture, even in a year's time, and everybody just loves his personality. My favorite story to come out of this year, actually, was one involving him, but it actually ultimately involved Nick Madrigal, who was obviously one of the top prospects in our team, but there was one game that Luis told Nick he was going to get 4 hits, He just said, you're going to get four hits. I'll get two. And then Nick actually ended up going 4 for 4. Luis had 3 hits, so he got his part of it wrong. He got Nick's part of it right. But every time Nick would get a hit, he'd come back into the dugout, and Luis would be like, okay, 3. All right, now 2, now 1. And that's just a special guy within a special clubhouse that we've had here in the White Sox system in Winston-Salem last year and this year. And I think those two things, the speed, which has really stood out since the get-go, but also just his personality, I think he's going to be a huge star in Chicago.
So there you go, Joel Wild, voice of the Dash. Luis Robert, just the numbers here, Rich. 482 the batting average, 525 is on base. Now, he's only walked 2 times, and he struck out 12 times if we're looking for some measure of caution, if you will. 6 homers, 17 RBIs. He's slugging 1.471. That's ridiculous. You saw him in spring training.
I tell you, he's a very impressive kid. I saw him 2 years in a row. In fact, the game we covered last year, this past spring, I should say, was in Surprise, Arizona. And he won a game with an 0-2 pitch, powered it over the left field fence for a home run. And afterward, of course, talked about it. But the White Sox are loaded in the outfield. You look at Ryan Cordell, who's off to a great start after they sent Palka down. Cordell, 4 for 7 in the 2 games he's played, and he can play defense. You've got Luis Basabe. You've got Micah Rodolfo. You've got Robert, I mentioned earlier. You've got a bunch of guys, Jimenez. The Sox are loaded in outfielders. Now, you say, well, how are they all going to fit in? Well, you know what? If when the team does get good, which they will get good next year, hopefully, to a different level, and progress this year also, you can trade some of those guys. Maybe one of those guys for some good talent. So there's a lot of options there. And Madrigal, you know, and Camp, the word on Madrigal was he is so far advanced. Some people are talking about bringing him up this year. Now, they probably won't, but that's how talented this guy is. He sprays the ball all over the place. He can run like the wind. And it's a very optimistic outlook for the White Sox all the way around. The one thing they do need, they need Kopech to come back. They need Rodon to pitch well. They need Dylan Cease to come up and pitch well. Their pitching has to come into gear, and then they'll be fine. But it's a very optimistic view from the outfield.
Nick Madrigal so far in 44 at-bats. He's hitting 318. His on-base percentage is at a very respectable, more than respectable, 409. 14 hits in 44 at-bats. He's got a triple. He's got 4 doubles. He's got 6 walks, so everything about that you got to like.
Ricky's high on him. I personally can tell you that he's really high on Madrigal, and the organization's obviously high on Robert. And look at the trades they made, you know, with Moncada now blossoming into a bona fide star, Kopech coming back, and Basabe in that one deal for sale. Things are coming together, and it'll take a little time here more, but they're on their way.
Somehow, some way, and maybe it won't pan out this way, but I sort of have a feeling that Luis Robert might actually turn out to be a better player than Aloy. And I think they're both going to be great. I mean, you're talking about Aloy's still learning to play the outfield.
He needs some work in the outfield, no question about that. Yesterday, you could see that.
Yeah.
He needs some work in the outfield. But he's a young guy, too, and Robert looks like a bona fide outfielder. And you got Cordell, who can play right field. Of course, Adam Engel's now in there, too. But defensively, that shapes up pretty better. Daniel Palka. We covered him also. And Second game of spring training, all right, in Peoria, Arizona. Nice warm day. Had a fly ball to the outfield, rounded the first baseman, pulled up. And hamstring, all right. We go out of locker during the game, actually. It was during the game in right field. And, oh, I drank a bunch of coffee and, you know, no big deal. And so it's not a big thing. Well, it turned out to be a big thing.
Yeah.
He sent him back 2 or 3 weeks. He never got his function together. The timing was off. The games we saw, we covered 2 games in Chase Field against Arizona, last 2 games of spring training, hit 2 shots, 1 for a home run and 1 that almost went out for a double. However, that's spring training. As you well know, when the season starts, everything's notched up. So Palka never got his groove, and he's in the minors.
Yeah, that part, for lack of a better word, just sucks. I mean, the guy had 27 homers last year as a rookie, led the team, and a guy I was rooting for, and you can't blame the White Sox for sending him down. He obviously was not anywhere close to doing the job, but here's a guy who finally got a chance to be on a big league roster to start on opening day, and that had never happened before in his career. He's not young either, as far as, you know, he's 27 years old. And so who knows when and if he gets back.
It'll be hard-pressed to get him back now because the competition is great among White Sox outfielders. Cordell's have off to a great start, and Cordell's very impressive defensively.
Right, and Falcons not. You know, Nicky Delmonico's in there. I'd love to be back up. And there's a lot of guys who are there. You know, Charlie Tilson's hitting 400 at AAA. You know, that's so it's not easy to get yourself a spot in the big leagues, and then, of course, you got to hold it when you do. All right, hey, we're going to come back. We're going to do the weekend review, Rich. We get to we're going to hear some moments that were a lot of fun as the White Sox picked up a bunch of wins this week. 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, Rich King in today. I didn't know you were born at the ballpark on the south side, Rich King.
Well, I was born, raised in the neighborhood called Pilsen, which is around 17th and Racine, 18th and Halsted, actually, for people who know the area. I grew up there, and then Brighton Park, and then all over the city of Chicago and the suburbs and back downtown for the last 20, 25 years. So it's been great.
And for the record on the text line from the 571, I'm not insulting Tom Skilling. I'm giving him a compliment, the fact that he was able to connect through weather. But they write, Mark, Tom Skilling's not a weather guy. He's an expert meteorologist. You're absolutely right. He is a legendary scientist of weather. He would be truly offended to be referred to as a, quote, weather guy. I hope he's not listening. Did I offend Tom Skilling?
No, he wouldn't care.
I was trying to lift my man up, Tom Skilling. Not that he needs it from me, obviously, but like the fact that he was able to become as iconic as he has. Normally, it's the sports guy or the news person. Tom did it from the weather chair.
Right,
that's all I was saying.
Exactly.
My God. All right, let's do the weekend review, and let's start last Sunday. With the White Sox and the Yankees, Sox 5, Yankees 2, they take 2 of 3.
And the 0-1, a swing and a line drive right center field. This is it well. To the track, at the fence, slam! Sox lead on a grand slam by Tim Anderson over the scoreboard and right. Sox lead 4-2. Turn on the fireworks.
Farmio loves the fireworks. First career grand slam for Timmy.
He had a great week, didn't he? And you know, I told him the last thing I told him Thursday when I left Detroit, we were interviewing him. I said, just don't let this stuff get to you. I said, just settle down, keep hitting. And he said, I can do my job. That's the exact words he said to them. So they want to get this thing past him.
Well, and I, you know, watching all the interviews with him, he's I'm moving forward. Yeah. I'm moving forward. But did you get the sense that it was bothering him?
I think during the interview Thursday, I did. Because he said some things in there that he's getting tweets from players and stuff, and I think it did bother him a little bit. But he was trying his best, and I think the White Sox, I know Ricky pretty much said it yesterday, and it'll all fade. This stuff goes viral for a while, and then it fades.
Yep.
And a week from now, I'll be talking about something else, and it'll all be free. And that's what they want. This is a thing this happens in baseball for years. You know, guys getting hit, so let's hope it does fade.
That Sunday game against the Yankees, Moncada had 3 hits. He had a walk. Sox stole 5 bases. Took 2 of 3 from the Yanks. And it's the first time the Sox have won consecutive series in New York since 0-2 and 0-3. So that was big-time impressive. And Carlos Rodon, 3 hits, 6 innings, struck out 5. 3-0 in 3 starts at Yankee Stadium.
You know, Rodon is the key. You know, Tom Pachorek told me that in camp, and I think he's right. Rodon can settle that staff down. Lopez is pitching well now. And Nova gives you innings. So that's the key to the White Sox this year. The bullpen, by the way, this week, I did the numbers. You know, 3.50 ERA doesn't sound that impressive, but the way things were going to start out with, they've settled things down a little bit for the week. They gave up 9 runs and 22 and a third, so things are looking better from that perspective, too.
Got to have that pen rolling. All right, let's do Monday. Sox 5, Royals 4. They were trailing late, but then Wellington Castillo helped out.
The 2-0 to Castillo. High and deep to right field. Got a chance. To the track. At the wall. Opposite field. Home run for Castillo. Turn on the fireworks. 5-4 Sox. Light it up.
And that was the final. First homer for Castillo since he was suspended last May. The 80-game suspension and a very slow start from this year. But that was huge.
He was slowed down in camp, too, by some minor injuries. But a veteran hitter can really come in the clutch, as he did in that game you just heard.
It'll be interesting to see if he's with the club all year, too. You got Zach Collins at AAA having a pretty decent start. Wellington's a free agent at the end of the year. Right. Who knows how the season's going to go. But if the Sox are in looking to the future mode at the deadline, that could be a guy that maybe somebody's interested in.
I think you're right. And James McCann, they got a real good find in him. He's a real bulldog.
Let's go Tuesday, White Sox 5, Royals 1. That's their third win in a row in 4-5, and a big day for Yoan Moncada.
The 2-1, high, deep left field. He's got a chance. At the track, at the wall, turn on the fireworks. He goes opposite field. Does Moncada. Sox even the score at 1.
Moncada, a strikeout in the first, one of three, and then a solo home run. There's a high, deep drive to right field. Solera again looks up, and another one out of here to right field for the White Sox to move on to this lead 4-1.
So
2-1.
Whoa, Yoan Moncada. This is probably the best development of the early season, right? I mean,
no question,
right?
Well, strikeouts are down. He's the two strike pitchers. He's handling a lot better, and he's got the power. And I think he's once they put him at third base, I think he relaxed. And I think that's obviously Ricky Renteria made a great move there. And he's taken off. And, you know, this guy could be a great, great superstar. Not just a star, a superstar. And that trade looking better by the minute from Boston.
So Jason Benetti, White Sox TV, had a great tweet about this, too. After 19 games, Yoan Moncada still hasn't struck out looking. 19 games last year, he had struck out looking,
right.
14 times.
A lot of those calls last year were borderline calls that could have gone either way, and they went against him, I think, on 40 occasions. So it's massive improvement, as expected. This guy was a top prospect, and he's right there right now.
Yeah, and I knew that he would be better at not taking called thirds this year, but this is a marked improvement, and early. Like, it's, I'm coming out of the gates, and I'm not going to be the same player as last year, directly in that regard.
And despite the controversy, we talked a lot about Anderson, this off-the-field stuff, but he has had a sensational year, and you could see it coming last year. He had a slow start last year. He came on, had a pretty good year overall, and then this year he's really taken off. And he is really nailing everything. So you talk about two guys who could be really studs in there, and you add a Jimenez and you add a Abreu in the mix, and you've got a pretty good deal going.
Yeah, let's fast forward all the way to Friday because we're short on time here. Wednesday was the brawl. We talked about that a ton. Royals won in 10-4-3. And then on Thursday, Tigers over the Sox 9-7 in a seesaw affair. Ryan Cordell had a home run in that one. But yesterday it was Sox 7, Tigers 3, and they got a pretty good start from that same guy in the first inning.
Going to pitch you from your past.
Yep. The 1-1 is swinging a high fly ball. This is crushed to center. That's going to send Jacoby Jones to the track. At the wall. It's gone for a home run. Over 420 to center. Sox lead 1-0 with two at-bats.
And there was also a historic moment in that game from Jose Abreu.
See if he gets one that he really likes. Abreu with runners at first and second. The 1-2. Line to left. Down the line. This is going to be a run producer. If it's fair, it's fair to the corner. One run, and Moncada streaks for home all the way from first. He stumbles and maintains his footwork and scores on the double by Abreu. The White Sox now lead 6-1.
And that was the 500th RBI for Jose Abreu.
You know something, too, after the game, even before the game, we were talking to Ricky about Abreu. He was pressing. He was, at one point, he's 1-for-14 this week. He wound up 3-for-19 after yesterday. But Renteria's explanation was he's pressing because he saw some other guys coming on. Moncada's pitch hitting well, and obviously Anderson is, and he felt he should contribute, put a little more pressure on himself than he's used to. But being Abreu, he's going to say, you know, he's going to settle down and have the kind of year that he's capable of having.
If you're just curious, like time frame for Jose Abreu to get to the 500 RBIs, Frank Thomas was the fastest in 661 games. Magaly Ordóñez did it in 720 games, and Jose Abreu in 761 games.
And make no mistake about it, he is the leader of that clubhouse, and you can see it in there when you go in. And it's not always, you know, the media doesn't always get a good insight on it, but in spring training you do. And he is definitely the guy they look to.
No doubt about it. All right, news coming up, and then Coop after that. This is White Sox Weekly till 6 on 720 WGN.
It's great to be back with WGN.
It's White Sox Weekly on the official radio station of the Chicago White Sox, 720 WGN.
720 WGN, this is White Sox Weekly. Pleased to be joined by the pitching coach, Don Cooper. Coop, 17 years. Does it feel like year one early in the season for you?
No, it's like any other year. You know, once the season starts, it's a grind. You got 162 games, you know, And there's a lots of ups and downs that go on in, during that. And, you know, we're going through some stuff right now that is going to make us better later.
Everybody, at least a couple days ago, what's wrong with Ronaldo Lopez? And then he comes out and he has his best start of the year. What were you seeing early, and what changed
in
your mind?
Let me ask you this. Who is that everybody? you know, everybody seems to have an opinion. You know, is it the people that are on the social media? Is that what they're doing? But yeah, Lopi started out with three starts that weren't what we were looking for. And then he had a good one, you know, and Lopi's good. You know, sooner or later, that guy's going to show up on a lot more regular basis. And I'd like to think the last start has got him started in that direction.
And you always talk about, like, and this is not, we're not reinventing the wheel here, but it's all about fastball command. Is that what it's coming down to for not just Lopi, but all your guys as far as getting off to a decent start here and maybe just upticking it a bit where you want them to be?
I would think that would definitely hold true for Rodon, Giolito, and Lopez. You know, Nova, it throws lots of strikes.
Yep.
We just got to make sure that they're well-located strikes. But fastball command is the biggest thing for anybody.
And... okay, let's talk about Giolito right now and the injury that he's dealing with. How hard is that going to be for him to come back, Coop?
It's not going to be. He's feeling better already. He felt like he could have had a sideline yesterday, and that was his normal day for a sideline. But, you know, obviously when a situation like this happens, we've got a long season ahead of us. We're going to first and foremost take care of him and that situation. And he'll be back when we feel real comfortable that he's past it. But that he's taking care of it right now, and I don't think it's going to be hard. He'll be back in there before long, but again, we got to take care of it.
So you're not saying it's going to be forever, but you guys are going to be cautious at the same time?
Well, what I'm saying is he's on a 10-day DL, okay?
Yeah.
So at the end of 10 days, we're going to make a decision one way or other. Does he need a little more time or not? But right now, it's trending in a very good direction, depending on especially how he felt yesterday.
Fair enough. What was your reaction to the Royals and Tim Anderson?
I think nowadays it's a different world, you know, so if people want to celebrate. I didn't think he pointed it directly at anybody on the Royals. I just don't think a guy should be thrown out for getting hit and basically going down to first base with a little chit-chat to the catcher. I've never seen that before. So that was kind of, you know, different to me. But, you know, they do what they do, and we do what we have to do, you know. So, I mean, I'm surprised because nowadays, listen, there's so many Latin American ball players that happens every day in their leagues in the Winter League. You know, I don't mind people celebrating as long as it's not pointed at someone directly. Like if he would have stared out of the pitcher and, you know, he didn't do any of that. He threw his bat in celebration and went down to first base. And they chose to do what they did. So, but to get thrown out for that, I don't like that.
Right, and suspended.
Thrown out and suspended.
Right, for words.
I don't get it. For words, whatever. Words on the field. I mean, there's lots of words going on the field. You know, that's the heat of the battle. And, you know, I'm dealing more with, I think, more actions. You know, and what's the old saying? Actions speak louder than words. So, you know, on a baseball field, there's lots of stuff said. And in the heat of the moment. So, you know, I think got this lightened up a little bit. But, you know, I don't know what he said, what happened. But, you know, the bottom line is he got hit with a pitch after hitting a home run, went down to first base. He got thrown out and suspended. I don't see the suspension or the throw out. So that's what I got on that situation.
Yeah, and just to back up that for a second, I don't know if you've been listening to MLB Radio. Trevor Bauer of the Indians basically said what you just said. He's like, look, it's hard to hit a home run in Major League Baseball. If you hit one and you want to enjoy it, that's cool. The dugout goes bananas, right? Everybody's high-fiving. But he just said exactly what you just said as far as just don't be pointing out at me like I got you. If you do that, then we're going to have an issue. And this is an evolution, though, for you, Coop. Like, I'm sure 10 years ago, if somebody did what Tim did, you wouldn't like it. But you've sort of seen how baseball's changed a little bit, is what I'm hearing.
That's what I mean by old school and, you know, newer school. I mean, things change. Not, you know, and that's where I'm at. It doesn't bother me unless it's pointed directly at an individual, a pitcher on our team. You know, it's going to happen. Make a better pitch. Don't let them do it.
Come on back here with Coop in a second. I'm going to ask him about Carlos Rodon, who had quite a good week here. And Coop, as is Coop's tendency, is looking for more. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. WGN White Sox Weekly. Going to pick it back up with Coop. Had a conversation with him before the game today. Rich King is here with a message for you, White Sox fans.
That's right, White Sox fans. Bleachers and Brews are back all season long. Get one bleacher seat and two beers for just $22. Must be 21 and over with valid ID. Bleachers and Brews presented by Budweiser. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Brews.
It's one of my favorite deals. $22 for a ticket. You get a beer's what, $11 out there right now?
It's not a good deal. It's a great deal.
That is not a bad deal right there. All right, let's jump back into Coop and the legendary Don Cooper, 17 years with the White Sox now. And what are we seeing from Carlos Rodon, Coop? He two starts this week, winning in New York and winning last night. And, yeah, I think you like what you're seeing, but perhaps Carlos could even take up another notch.
Well, listen, I think he's had five starts, and I think in four of them, and maybe even four and a half, because there was some positive in the other outing, he's done well. You know, I wish we could cut down on some walks, you know, but he's commanded his fastball pretty good. We're whipping out a lot more change-ups starting, you know, last night, the time before we started using more change-ups. And he's got a slider that don't quit. You know, he's got a good slider. And some of those, you saw last night, he threw some 78, 79. Those are really curveballs. The harder ones, the 86, 87s, those are sliders. So he's changing speeds. He's throwing enough strikes. And he's going out there and taking care of the, you know, 6 to 7 innings for us. And he's been good so far. And this guy's a guy that's this is his first full season right here. He looks good. He's looked great from spring training in a lot of ways as far as healthy, and he's got five starts where we need like 27 more from him. He's in a good place.
Yeah. And Santana?
Well, Santana struggled a bit. You know, listen, he's coming back from an injury. He missed all of last year. Mm-hmm. He's scheduled to go today, weather permitting here in Detroit, and we're going to find out more about him. At one time in 17, he was an all-star. The fastball is not quite the same as it was, but he's only been pitching a month and a half, and we're going to, you know, continue to give him some opportunities to go out there and do what he's done in the past. We know what he's done when he's healthy. And so he's got a little something to climb out from, you know, meaning that basically a year of inactivity with a finger injury. And, you know, so we're going to see what we get today.
Yep. And, Coop, before you go, the bullpen – you got to like the back end right now, right? And, I mean, I feel like you got to be pretty satisfied there. And you guys
the back end is experienced with Colome and Herrera and even Jones, I'll put in there. I'll talk about Fry. Fry is starting to come out of it. He's had like four or five outings in a row, which he did well. Last night was probably one of the better ones, a full inning. The other guys are rookies, younger guys. And you know what? People don't know. You know, they don't know their usage. I mean, because of Giolito's injury, because of a couple starts where we didn't get length, they've been asked to go a little bit above and beyond the call. Like Ryan Burr comes to mind. Like,
yeah,
he pitched last night for an inning and gave up a run, but he had a day off the day before and pitched basically up and down three times.
Yep.
The day before that. And when you usually do that, we try to give you a couple days off, because, but out of necessity, we had to use him. And he stepped up. He went above and beyond the call, gave us that inning. Even though he gave up a run, he wasn't as strong as he could have been because we're using him a lot out of necessity. The same thing for Manny Banuelos. Hell, Manny Banuelos pitched three innings, 2 days off, another three innings, day off, we get him hot. Above and beyond the call. And so that's kind of what's been going on. Ruiz, a rookie and a position change guy, you know, with getting two innings out of him. I think with Burr and Ruiz especially, they are getting great opportunities and opportunities to gain more and more experience. The games that they put in combined with their workload. Listen, I'm okay with all of those guys. We're trying to catch up a little bit right now because of what I said a minute ago with an injury and Lucas coming out in the third. We've got to fill that whole game. And an ineffective start or two without giving us length. You know, more is asked. More has been asked of the bullpen. And you know what? They went out there. Nobody's saying, I can't go or anything like that. They step up. And because that happens every year where, okay, more is going to have to be asked of the bullpen. And on the other hand, there's times that, hey, we need another inning out of a starter. And we might have to leave him in the game a little bit longer because of we're a little bit short and trying to catch up and trying to get guys the rest we'd like to get them to where they can go out there at full strength and do the things we envision them doing.
The Ryan Burr, I love his body language, Coop. You could see how much he really, really wants it.
Well, you're right. You're right. That's a good observation because, funny you mentioned that, last night after the game, I praised him because he just went above and beyond the call, not only in this day, but a day earlier because when he had to get up and down three times. And he hadn't done that. You know, he had to come in, finish an inning, and went back out there for basically two more times. So he helped the team. That aids the team. And, you know, another thing I like about him, he's always ready to go, and he competes out there. He's competing, and that's appreciated. And you know what? The effort, and we know when guys are being asked more of, and so it's the effort and them stepping up that's appreciated.
Last one, Coop. A year ago today, Danny Farquhar collapsed at the dugout. Crazy day at Guaranteed Rate Field. What do you remember?
I just remember the kid being in trouble. And I remember a short conversation I had with him before he went into his, before he was hurting. You know, he just kind of passed out, basically. And I also remember our crack medical staff led by Herm Schneider and Brian Ball and the doctors that were there. My thinking is it was a miracle because if it hadn't happened there and our people didn't act like they did, they wouldn't have gotten him to the hospital quick enough. If he's driving in his car or he's home, the poor kid might be gone. And, you know, all the concern that we had for him and his family because, you know, we were just concerned and wanted him to live and survive. We weren't thinking about pitching or anything like that. It's never happened before on a bench like that, but our people were ready. And, I think the surgeons that treated him, you know, from what I heard, that one of the best surgeons in America happened to be there. I think it was a miracle. I think everything was like a perfect storm, if you will, to help him. And to get him out of there and get him to the hospital where he could be treated and the right people were there. And that's what we were praying for, that he would be okay and that the doctors had the knowledge and the wisdom to help him, and they did. And we're just all ecstatic when we saw him come back. Basically, a week later, he came to the ballpark. And it was a terrible event that turned into a – you know, wow, what a great event that the kid's alive and his daughters still have a dad.
There you go, Coop. Wow. Right? Remember that a year ago? Crazy.
That was horrible, wasn't it? And then Coop summed it up pretty well, you know, about that incident. But getting back to what he said, he had some great comments in there. Carlos Rodon, interesting story. I mean, we talked to him in spring training. He would not admit it. You know, he had a great start last year. He was called up on June of last year. Because he was still rehabbing.
Yeah.
And he had a great get-go at the beginning. 9 consecutive quality starts. He was 5-0, 1.84 ERA. Then he petered out. He wound up finishing 0-5 with a 9.22 ERA. And I asked him in spring training, what happened? He says, I just pitched bad. That's it. Then I asked Renteria what happened to him. And he said, you know what, he won't admit this, but he tired out. People forget this is his first full-time deal. I mean, he's been injured every year. That's why he's a key to the staff. He's a first-round draft pick. This is the year they got to get some production from him. And so far, so good. He's pitching very well.
And I thought it was interesting the way Coop sort of addressed it. Well, he's had 5 starts. We need about 27 more.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
To me, that's sort of a little bit of a window what's going on behind the scenes of how he's trying to just hold him accountable in between each. Not that necessarily Carlos needs that, but I think Coop is looking like we need need you to be solid all season long.
You have to stay healthy in this game, in any game for that matter. And if you get Lopez and him going, Lopez pitched well his last time after a tough start. And you got Ivanova giving innings, and Giolito comes back. Giolito looked great before he got hurt. He's breezing along.
And that just sucked. When he's going to the dugout.
Terrible.
And you could see the anguish on his face because he knows that I'm off to a good start this year for the most part. And I've changed my mechanics. I feel so much more comfortable. My confidence is uprising. And now I'm out, and I don't know how long. Well, the White Sox are optimistic, but you just never know.
Hamstrings are tough. If you were at the game, you saw him stumble a little bit. Then he tried one of my pitches. We asked him about this in Detroit, and he said, I tried two or three pitches, not full tilt. Then the last pitch, I went full tilt. I knew I couldn't do it. And as a precaution, they took him out. Now, he said it's a minor thing, and I believe him. Let's hope it is, and one or two starts, and he's back, because he's a key also, a guy that has to come on.
I got to say, it didn't look minor. He could not put a full weight on that leg.
I know. Well, hamstrings are hard. I'm not world-class athlete, but I had a hamstring injury in college, and it takes 3 or 4 weeks, and you can't press it, because if you start coming, it feels okay for a while. I can get back. Next thing you know, you can't do it.
Right, and you start messing with, I'm going to compensate this way for a pitcher. All of a sudden, your shoulder falls off. You got
to
be right.
That's what happened to Palka. Yeah. He had the hamstring in camp, and sent him back 3 weeks.
Yeah, so, well, we'll see what happens. So, fingers crossed, it'll be back out there soon. All right, final timeout. We'll wrap up White Sox Weekly next, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly wrapping it up. Sox and Tigers tomorrow. Today, if you're wondering what happened, they were rained out. Rich King, you just did your first ever White Sox Weekly on WGN. How do you feel?
Oh, I loved it. Are you kidding me? This is like a mulligan in life for me. Radio is where I began, and maybe that's where I'm going to end my life. But radio is a lot of fun. It really is, because you have to dress up, makeup on. It's nice.
Your first year in radio in the city was what?
I was as a writer or as on the air? On the air, 77.
And then behind the scenes?
68.
1968.
Yeah. That's when I started at WGN, back at the other building. That was radio and television combined. And I was a writer. I wrote Jack Brickhouse's 620 Sports.
You wrote Jack Brickhouse's?
Jack Brickhouse's 620.
620 in the morning or in the afternoon?
Afternoon.
Afternoon sports.
Brickhouse was a horse. He did everything. He did games, came back, did shows. They did a show at night. He was all over the place, but he was obviously a Chicago legend. Every time I pass the statue, I say hello to Jack. He was a funny guy, great guy.
That's unbelievable. How long was his cast?
6:20 to 6:30.
10 minutes of sports?
And Brickhouse, if you wrote the copy, you wrote 10 minutes of it. If you're lucky, you got three of the minutes on the air. He'd see a story, two stories in, starts to ad-lib about one of his stories about where his personality was, and you'd never get the rest of it on. So if you wrote the copy, you took it for granted, you're going to get about 3 minutes of your copy.
That is a different time right there. Oh, my God.
He was a legend. And I had a chance to work with Harry Carey, too. So
did you really?
In the broadcast booth and doing talk shows. So I've been very, looking back, when you retire, you look back and you count yourself lucky to be involved with so many great people and so many great personalities, not to mention Brent Musburger and the people I knew. So it was a wonderful ride. And this is like an extension of it here on WGN.
How many years with Dave Bennett for you? My God.
Oh, God.
Now, Dave's like, he just started in the business.
More than 10, I know that, because I hired him back in the
days. Did you really?
Yeah, and he was a producer of the Bears 1977.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Great to be with you today, Rich. Really enjoyed it.
Okay, enjoyed it. It was a blast.